And greetings. Welcome to LennonHonor.com. My name is Lennon Honor, and I greet you with lots of love, peace, and positivity. I want to thank you so much for tuning in to this radio show here today. Today happens to be Saturday, July 13th, 2013. And we have a very special guest, someone I've been really looking forward to having on as an interview guest for quite some time now, Max Egan. This is someone whose work goes back many, many years. And when I first got started, I remember we had had a very brief exchange on YouTube. And all these years later, Max has risen to the forefront in terms of a movement of individuals who have researched, done deep research, but also sought to help many, many people around the world. And I'm so honored and thankful to have Max as an interview guest today. Before we get into the interview guest, I do have a couple of announcements, if y'all don't mind. I want to mention we do have a chat room. If you have any questions during the show, you can sign into the chat room and then click on my name, Lennon Honor, and send me a private message. Okay, I'll ask your question on air. There's also a call-in number if you'd like to call in, and if you have a question or comment that you'd like to make during the show, you can do that as well. You're more than welcome to do that. All of that information is listed on the right-hand side of the page. I should mention that if you don't see it there right now, all you will have to do is refresh your page in just a moment, because it looks like what I tried to correct earlier, it's still not quite done yet. So try again, try refresh your page, and let's say about 20 seconds, and all the information on how you can call in should come up there. Other announcements real quickly here. I want to thank my web designer here at LennonHonor.com, Sean. He's done a very awesome job. I want to thank him. Also want to thank Herman. He showed me how to do live radio shows and live video streams here on LennonHonor.com. And I must also thank all of our premium members here on LennonHonor.com. If you're not a premium member yet, I want to encourage you to sign up as a premium member today. If you look in the navigation bar, there is a highlighted link that says premium membership. Click on that link when you have some time. All of the information will pop up on how you can sign up for premium membership here. We have over a year and a half worth of premium content, over 100 podcasts, over 80 archive videos, 4 lectures for women, 5 lectures for men, special guest interview archive, Metamorphosis, this is a live video stream, Positive Relationships live video stream, all of that's archived for premium members. Visions of Manhood, another live video stream, is archived for premium members. We have more lecture series there. My wife has a wonderful, wonderful self-esteem podcast that she has for premium members as well. I also have a new video series that will be premiering within the next couple of days, the Global Motion Picture Stage Show. You do not want to miss this one. I haven't done this type of a documentary in quite some time, and I've been working on it diligently for the last couple of days, actually the last week, really. And I've been putting in a whole lot of time with that, and I've gotten so excited about it. I'm really happy that I'm getting back into to doing that type of work before. So I want to doing that type of work again. I've done it before and on LennonHonorFilms.com. So I want to encourage you to sign up as a premium member today. 3 other announcements real quickly here. I am on Facebook under Lennon Honor, and there's a calendar of all of our radio shows and upcoming interview guests, all of my live video streams, as well as upcoming events. I have a conference that I'll be at in San Diego in a week. If you're in the San Diego area or in the Southern California area, next weekend, make sure that you come on out and talk with me. I'll have books, DVDs, et cetera. I'll be honored to meet you. One last thing, we do have a mailing list here on LennonHonor.com. If you look in the upper right-hand corner of this page, there is a box where you can just, all you have to do is type in your email address, click a button, and that's that. I send out an email every single Friday, once a week, and I give an update on what's going on with production and also all of our radio shows, live video streams and radio interview guests. I give all that information there. And I may be changing that time from Fridays to Tuesday, okay? So I'll let people know within the next couple of weeks, because we're making some minor adjustments to the schedule here at LennonHonor.com. Well, that's all of the announcements. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for being patient as I do a little bit of housework here. This is the housework part of my shows here, give out information. Let's get into the radio interview. Max Egan, of course, a world-renowned let me just go ahead and read what I do have here. Okay, Max Egan is a radio show host. He's a video producer. He's a lecturer. He's a musician and an artist. And as I stated before in the intro, he has really come to the forefront as an individual who is not only sharing much of his research, but also assisting many people around the world. And he's doing so in such a way to where he's empowering people. And that's one of the things I'm really, really big on, is seeking to empower people, assisting people in developing their internal power, and then also to develop solutions. We're going to be talking about that, too, during the show today. He currently lives in New South Wales, Australia. His website, www.thecrowhouse.com. www.thecrowhouse.com, www.thecrowhouse.com. He's also on YouTube. He has a phenomenal YouTube page. If you're not subscribed there yet, I want to encourage you to do so today. You can type in YouTube, The Crow House, and his YouTube page will come up, and he has wonderful information there on his website, on his YouTube page. And then one last announcement here. He's on Facebook under Max Egan, okay, M-A-X-I-G-A-N. Add him as a friend and keep abreast as to all of his upcoming productions. Well, without any further ado, I'd like to bring to the show Max Egan. Max, welcome to the show.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for having me on, brother. It's an honor to be here. I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time, so it's good to get together.
Yes, yes, and I'm honored. I know we were able to get together on, let's see, whose show was that? This was a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago. I can't remember.
I think it was Vinny Eastwood.
Yeah, Vinny, on his show. And that was a wonderful opportunity to speak with you. And I only wish we had spoken years and years before.
Well, I've been meaning to. It's just one of those things. It's just hard to get around to things sometimes. With what I do and with what you do, we often find ourselves to be quite busy. And it's one of those things that it's there on the shelf. It's going to happen one day, but you just haven't pulled it down and got into it yet, you know?
Yeah, and isn't that true? There is a lot of work to be done, and I know that I put in a lot of time, and maybe sometimes people don't realize how much work is put into it. So when we do get a chance to talk or when we do have a little time for respite, it's quite rare. Is that true?
Well, it is. It is. I've got a huge backlog of emails and messages and things to get to at the moment, and it's just very, very difficult to get to things. I've got so much going on around me, and it's hard. Things just get put on the back burner. And you want to do all of them, but it's just difficult to get to them all. But I'm getting there, slowly but surely, getting things done.
That's right. Speaking of email, do you ever do this? Because I do this all the time. I'll get to an email and I'll read it and I'll say, okay, I'm going to answer this a little bit later on today. Or I'll answer this tomorrow. and then I'll get more emails throughout today and I'll say the same thing. And then I'll look at my email list and I look at the dates and I look, oh, wait a minute. I've been doing this now for about 3 weeks.
Yeah. It happens. I think I've got to answer this, but I've got all these emails to look at, so I'll just look at these, and I'll flag the ones I want to answer and stuff, and then by the time I get to it, my email box is full again, and they're 3 or 4 pages deep, and I'm trying to remember which one it was. It's difficult, you know?
Yes. And plus,
I've got 2 Facebook accounts. I've got 2 YouTube accounts, and I get messages on all of them. So I think, okay, where was that message? Where was it?
Yeah.
You know, I don't even know which account I'm looking at half the time. So it is very, very difficult to keep track of the messages. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But I think that's part of the journey, too. And I think that will be a wonderful place to start. And I think that, I've had this experience myself where people assume that, the work that I'm doing now, whether they find it beneficial or valuable or not, they think that I've always been doing this kind of work and I've always been this type of person and I haven't grown. I've always been this way, like from the time I was born. But that's not true. There's this journey and I'm still growing. I'm still learning and I've gone through a whole lot of mess throughout my life and transcended a lot of different things. And I think it'd be good to start with your journey a little bit. What has your journey been like over the years to getting to the point where now you're on the world stage and you're helping a lot of people all around the world?
Well, look, when I was born, I mean, I was very awake when I was very, very young. I was very aware that the world was all messed up when I was like 4 years old. But, you know, you kind of slip into society and you get molded to act in a certain way and then you try to make it work. And, of course, you can't really make it work, not if you're sort of half awake and you've got a spiritual understanding from a young age and you're looking at things thinking, well, hang on, it shouldn't be like this. It's very, very difficult to make the system work. But like everybody else, I was pushed into it. I was molded through the system. I found myself getting kicked out of a lot of schools along the way. I just didn't fit into any schools. I went to 4 different schools. Just didn't fit in anywhere. Couldn't understand why they were trying to train me into what they wanted and why they weren't allowing me to be me. Through the whole thing. And for me, in many ways, I mean, because I was awake like that and I kind of gave up through my childhood. I just said, well, this isn't going to work. So I became a musician and lived on the outside of society with the whole things. And my life was like a train wreck, really, for years. I mean, trying to make it work. I mean, I had these spiritual understandings, but I just couldn't make anything in life work. I just couldn't understand why the system was like this. And, kind of started researching ancient history, and when you really start looking into ancient history, you find out that everything they've told you is wrong. It's all completely wrong. There's this stuff, these huge monuments lying all over the planet, which are saying that everything they told you is wrong. So you start to think, well, how did they miss all this? And you think, well, they couldn't have missed it. So obviously they've covered it up. So what's it with the cover-up? Then you start getting into, well, government cover-ups and government conspiracies, and you go down all these rabbit holes, and you come out on the other end, and you go, well, I knew the world wasn't the way I thought it was. You know, it wasn't the way it looked. And, you know, by the time I'd got to sort of, you know, adulthood, it became a real hobby of mine to just watch the puppet show and watch how the world worked. And then when 9/11 happened, like many people, I thought, well, hang on, now it's getting really serious. This is the big event we've been waiting for, so it's time to really start speaking out. I've got all this information that I've been researching for years, all this stuff that I can see right before my eyes. So it's time I started speaking on, you know, and telling people about it. Discovered YouTube, started making slideshows and clips and telling people, you know, trying to help wake people up. And ended up where I am now. I got offered the radio show, I started making films and all this sort of stuff. It was just kind of a natural progression that led me to this point. But I thought it was important to do so because there's a lot of people out there that are bringing this information to people in a very, very fearful way.
Yeah.
And I see it all as opportunity. I think you've got to know what a problem is, otherwise you can't fix the problem. You've got to know it's there before you can fix it. But you've got to see it as an opportunity. That's what a problem is. It's an opportunity for you to address the problem. Okay, so how do you address it? What is the problem? Well, basically, the problem is the disempowerment of humanity, the disempowerment of mankind. We've been taken from our path, and we've been taken into this false reality, and we need to step back and reclaim our power. That's the key to the whole thing. So I started doing the radio shows and trying to bring this message to people to try to help them change their perspective on how they're looking at these problems. It's nothing to be feared. It's the best opportunity we've ever had for real freedom, because now the workings of the whole slavery system has been laid so bare. And the way they do it, all the mind control, all the stuff, there's so many things. I mean, Lennon, you know, there's so many ways they control us. And now it's all been laid bare. So this I see as the greatest opportunity in the evolution of human consciousness that we've ever had. I think it's a wonderful time to be alive.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you made so many important points. I've jotted down some notes, and I hope to get to each one of these throughout this interview. I want to go back to your childhood. You said you were kicked out of several schools. Was there any particular reason why?
I just kept arguing with the teachers. I didn't like what they were teaching us. I'm going, well, hang on, you've just told us this stuff. And I've just read a book which gives a completely different story about what you just told us as fact. You should be presenting that to the class as the most commonly accepted theory. And you should be encouraging us to think and to look at all perspectives on these things. And they would get so irate with me. And I just didn't work. Nobody would have me in their class. None of the teachers wanted to know about me. So I used to go into the library and just sit there and read books all day. I ended up with my own desk outside the principal's office for my last 6 months of school because no class would have me because I just kept questioning the teachers on every single thing they wanted to teach me. Because I saw them training me as being a little cog for the big machine. They weren't doing anything to prepare me for life. They weren't doing anything to help me understand myself or understand reality or understand why the world was this way. I couldn't understand why we had to pay to be alive. I couldn't figure that out. How can we own land? What do you mean, own land? We were only here for 50 years or 100 years. The Earth's been here for 4.6 billion. How do we own any of it?
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
I mean, what's going on with this? Why do I have to pay to be alive? I was born here. What am I supposed to do? Go and live on another planet or something? I mean, why is the world this way? And I could never find that. And this is the one thing they were trying to keep me from thinking at school. And I just didn't fit. And so that's why I went through so many schools, yeah.
Yes, and that's as fascinating. You said, why is this world this way? It's that questioning. And would you say that as a child, you questioning teachers, at that age, is that same mentality is what brings you to where you are now, where you question the nature of the reality that pretty much the global population is kind of led to accept?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we live in an economic reality whereby every single part of human consciousness has been reduced to commerce. Mm. And, you know, we need to address this situation. I think it's hugely damaging to the human spirit. It's hugely damaging to the human creative spirit. We don't get to experience ourselves because we're too worried about collecting paper to have everything that the earth provides for us in abundance. You know, we think the paper's real, but it's not. It's life and health and the world we live on that's real. The paper is just fiction. It provides scarcity. That's all money really does, is provide scarcity to people. You know, it puts you in a position where you have to pay for everything that should be abundantly available to you.
So true. And speaking of creativity, you said that you were a musician. Do you mind me asking, to what degree, what instrument, genre, style?
Well, I used to play lead guitar. I used to like playing acoustic guitar as well. To me, it was a real escape. It was just a way of, you know, escaping from the world and creating. Because, you know, this world, this society doesn't allow you to create, really. You've got to fit as a little cog within some machine somewhere. But by being a musician, I'm able to spontaneously create. Even when I was playing in cover bands and things, I'd never really learned their songs the way they played them. I'd always play them my way, so I was being creative with all of it. And this is just the way I did it. It's the way I was able to survive. It's the way I was able to keep my sanity. And I was able to, you know, work, live on the outside of society, either playing lead guitar or doing front of house mixing, just always involved in the music industry. I was able to live on the outside of society. I didn't really have to pay taxes or live a normal life the way other people did. I never had to work regular hours or any of that sort of stuff. And, you know, it gave me a great opportunity as well, because it also, I got to travel. I got to meet different people from all different walks of life. And I got to view the world from their perspective, because when you're a musician, a lot of people want to know the musician. You get to, it opens a lot of doorways, you know. You meet rich people, you meet poor people. You get to see the world from their perspective. You get to travel to different countries and meet different people, and it kind of opens a lot of doorways for you. And I was just able to survive that way. So I always got to live on the outside of society. I mainly became a musician because I just didn't fit in society. I couldn't do any of that stuff. I couldn't get a business where I was making money out of people. I couldn't exploit people. It's just not who I was. Every time I tried to do something, to start a business or to do something where I was going to be profiting from people, it always messed up. I just couldn't do it. I just didn't have the heart or the aptitude to do that. It didn't make sense to me that was how I had to live my life. I thought, you know, life is about creation. It's about expression. It's about art. You know, your life is your art. Your art of living, your art of loving, your art of caring. The way you do things is your art. That is your life. That is who you are. You are an artistic expression of creation. That's what you are. And for me, the only outlet within the parameters of this system was music. So that's what I did, you know.
Yes. Awesome. And I can definitely relate to that. Spent many, many years as a trained musician, and I know what you mean by you meet all types of people, different backgrounds, and they just want to know you for the music.
Exactly. It breaks down all those fictional doors of division, which don't exist. They're all fictional. It breaks down all the barriers. It breaks down racial barriers. It breaks down religious barriers, ethnic barriers, everything. It's all gone. It's just about the music. It's about the now. It's about that note that you're in right now. That's what I used to love about playing lead guitar. Every note was right here, right now, and then it was gone. So you're always living right in the now. And you'd be playing a solo, and you wouldn't even know where you were beginning or ending or going. You just spontaneously compose, and every note is right here, right now, and then it's gone, and you're totally in that moment. And that's what I loved about it. But really looking at it as well, it's a real escapism from society. If you look at how music's been used now, when I see the industry that I was involved in, I mean, now I look at the music industry and I go, oh my God, I was part of that. I was actually part of that. And really, it's a huge distraction from the real art of my life. It's an avenue that I was forced to go down. If society had been functional in any way, shape or form, I probably wouldn't even have gone down that path, because I would have been experiencing my inner art and been able to express myself in real ways where I didn't need to pick up a mechanical device to do so. You know, because, I mean, a guitar is a mechanical device.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, you can't walk into the forest and pick up a guitar and start grooving with the forest. You can start banging on trees, you can make drums, you can do all sorts of stuff like that, but it's a mechanical instrument. And that's just kind of the avenue I was forced to go down. But, you know, I began to see what my life could have been if I hadn't been playing music. And I sort of backed away from it. All these things happened in my life, actually. Because I had a huge music collection. I had all these things. And music was always what I'd fall back on. If I'd go somewhere and there was no work, didn't have any money, well, I'd put a band together. And I'd start doing that. You know, it was always something I fell back on. But it kept on damaging me and hurting me and pushing me to turn my hobby into my main forte. And then music became my hobby. And that's the way it pushed me. All these things happened in my life. I ended up losing my whole music collection. All sorts of things happened, and it absolutely devastated me, because music had always been where I'd escape to, and suddenly it became the source of my pain. And I thought, well, this is interesting. All I've got to immerse myself in now is my research. And that's when I really started to excel. I thought, well, this is why I was into this when I was four. This is where I should have gone. Music was just a way of escaping that system. Mm. I still love music. I still love what it does and how it makes you feel. But when I see how it's used to lead people away from themselves, you know, the modern electric music industry is a very, very subtle form of mind control, and it's actually quite damaging to the human spirit. And that's coming from a Shred-O-Matic lead guitarist, okay, who still loves the sonic bliss of turning on the amp and just going, oh, yeah, listen to that whammy bar, you know. Like, I still love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm not saying music's bad, and if you're a guitar player, you're doing the wrong thing. But you know, you've got to look at how this is used. I mean, you know this, Lennon. You know what I'm saying.
Yes, absolutely. And it's interesting, and I totally agree. And this has come from someone who studied from a child as a musician all the way up to the age of 22. Went to college for it, and went on tour as a musician, and been to different places around the world, and spent so many, many, many days, years, decades as a musician. You're absolutely right. What music has become nowadays, at least the system and how it kind of pumps certain genres out there, it is a subtle form of mind control. I should mention too, real quickly here, is for me as a child, music was my form of escape too. Music and video games, because of all of the things that were taking place inside of my home that were quite destructive. And I found that that was a way for me to escape. But then I also found that it was almost a type of self-imprisonment almost. And it took me a long time for me to get out of that mindset to where I became comfortable enough to, like you, begin to do more of the research and try to share research and help people in that way. So there's so many parallels that I can totally relate to as you continue to talk about your journey. And speaking of your journey, where you're at now, I'd always like to ask this question. Did you ever think that you would be at this point in terms of your impact on people around the world? Did you ever believe that that was part of this journey, or that you would ever get to that point?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's nothing that I ever planned to do at all. It all got sort of thrown into my lap. Like, you know, when someone showed me, because I was hitting chat rooms, I was trying to wake people up to the fact that, you know, everything's messed up. 9/11 was staged. All this stuff's going on, folks. You need to pay attention to what's going on here. We're in a serious situation here. And I'm thinking, the power of the internet. How do you harness the power of the internet? I keep hearing about this. How do you do it? And then I opened up a 9/11 truth site, and a friend of mine from Perth, a guy I hadn't met, contacted me through that site, and he showed me a slideshow that he made on the Bali bombing. And I looked at it. It was on YouTube, and I thought, well, YouTube. I thought YouTube was a place where high school kids went and uploaded their school videos and stuff. You know, I just thought it was a kid's place, you know. And there's this guy who's made this slideshow about the Bali bombing, and I thought, well, hang on, I can do this. I can put together all this stuff that I know, and I can make a slideshow, and, hey, I'll make it like a 90-minute film. So I did it, and I made it in 10 parts. You could only upload 10 minutes to YouTube at the time. So I put this stuff on YouTube. I thought, well, I can do that. And because I'm arty, I'm kind of an artist sort of a person, rather than just making a slideshow, I did a fancy little intro, and I made it look like a film. I did an outro. I had rolling credits, you know, because I enjoyed it. It was an artistic project, you know. Fade-ins and fades-out, and created little scenes and stuff. I thought, oh, this is fun. And it was interesting because everything that I'd been doing for my son, who was in a game clan, I'd been helping him learn how to make videos and edit videos and stuff. So I'd gone through the whole process of learning how to make a film clip without realizing why I was learning how to do it. Mm. And then discovered YouTube, started doing this, and I thought, well, that was okay. That got received well. I mean, I released five parts of the thing. It was called The Big Picture. And after I released five parts, I didn't worry about the rest. And then people started emailing me saying, where's the rest of the film? Well, wow, people are actually watching it.
Yeah.
So I finished it. And I thought, well, that's good. I mean, but I've kind of left them hanging, so I better give them something to go on with. So I made a film called Fight the New World Order with Global Noncompliance, which was a 26-minute film, which just kind of laid it all out. It said, here's the problem, here's the solution. And it just went totally viral. And before I know it, I got approached by a radio show host who wanted to interview me. I did a few interviews with him, and the station offered me my own show, and I thought, okay. So I just started doing that, and I've been doing that for 6 years now. And I do the show sometimes. I think, I wonder if anyone's actually listening to this, you know. And I find out that, it's going out to thousands, possibly millions. I mean, I don't even know how many people listen to this show now. But the Crow House gets between 90 and 130,000 hits a day. So it gets a lot of traffic. Mm-hmm. You know, I get approached by people who want me to put advertising on there, like, daily. And there's still no advertising on there. Everything I do on the Crow House is for free. All the radio shows are for free. All the archives, all the films I've made, the book that I wrote, which I didn't think anybody would read. Now thousands of people have read it, and it's full of typos in there. I never even checked it. I just wrote it out and put it up there. I didn't think anybody would ever read it. Now I've got to pull it down and fix it and actually create it so it works properly and it's not full of typos and spelling mistakes. So, but anyway, so I had no idea that people would receive the information the way they have, but it's really gratifying that they have, because I think it's a powerful message. I think the message of self-empowerment is the key to the whole thing. Now, even with all of the problems that we face from this system and this society, the political system, the government, all the problems that we face, we're always looking for legal remedy within the parameters of the legal structure of the system, which was created by the system to protect the system. It's not there to give us a remedy. It's there to protect the system. So what is the system? Well, the system has been put in place via legislation that's been written by politicians. Okay, so who are these politicians? They're public trustees that we elect and put into positions of our office and power to manage our infrastructure for us and hold our nation and hold our wealth and hold our countries and manage our lives in trust for us. And if they're enacting legislation which is placing us in a state of hardship, this is a breach of trust. That's how we have to look at it. We've got to step above the system. We've got to realize that the system is fiction. It was created by people. We're all people. All people were created equal. We don't have to do this. We've just been taught that it's real. We've been taught that this is the way reality is. But it's not. It's just rules written in books. It's just, it's not real. It's not law. It's legislation. If you look at law, there's really only one law as far as I can say, and that's do no harm. 8 letters, 3 words. That's it. That should be the law. And this system does nothing but harm to the people who operate within the parameters of the system, and yet the system was apparently created to serve the needs of the people. So what's going on here? It's all upside down. So it's a breach of trust. The whole thing is a breach of trust. The whole Edward Snowden revelation, people are arguing whether this man was a good guy or a bad guy, whether it's a controlled release, whatever. It doesn't matter. It indicates a clear breach of trust by Western governments. It indicates governments acting in collusion to spy on not only their own people, but the rest of the planet. They're doing it in our name. It's a breach of trust. These people don't need all of this information. You know, the world isn't this dark and dangerous place that they tell us it is. The only dark and dangerous part about it is out-of-control governments. These governments are in place because we don't pay attention. We don't know who we are. And we're always looking, like I said, within the parameters of the legal system. We're not stepping above it and realizing that this is a simple trust agreement, and that's where the remedy lies.
Would you say that the trust factor, to hand over trust, or at least to abide to this system in that way, is the result of people not knowing their power in the first place?
Absolutely, absolutely. But again, you can't blame them for it because they've been trained to be this way. This is what the education / indoctrination system is all about. They train them to believe the system is real.
Okay, explain that. The education is part of this. So part of the system in terms of how people are led to get to the point where they externalize power in this way, the education system does that. How so?
Well, it teaches people to always respect authority, and it grades people as well. The whole grading system, think about it. You know, you go to class, you go, we've taught you this, and you need to regurgitate what we said. Don't think outside the box. Just regurgitate this. And if you regurgitate it good, then you're an A-class person. If you don't, then you're a B-class or a C-class or a D-class person. This grading, it's very, very competitive. It makes life competitive. It indoctrinates you into always competing with the people around you, not really experiencing yourself for yourself. It's always based on your left brain analytical reality and the way you analyze things. It's all left brain. The whole education is designed to lead you away from the art of yourself. So you never know your own power. It's always externalized because it's always measured by somebody else through this grading system. And you're given these social standards you've got to measure yourself up to. It prepares you for all of this. And most importantly, it trains you to respect authority. Always do what you're told. You know, it's very, very important that people look at this. But most importantly, it leads you away from the art of yourself. That's what it's designed to do.
When we say respect authority, because people say it all the time, you have to respect authority, you have to respect authority. From my vantage point, that would just simply indicate that you always yield to authority. So in other words, whatever authority says or whatever authority tells you, you accept without any critical thought. Or like when we talked about earlier, you don't question. You know, earlier when you were a child, you said you always question the teachers. And then, you know, as an adult, you question the system. Does this concept of respecting authority, is that really almost like a fanciful way of, or a nice way of saying that you must always yield and comply to authority?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, you will kneel and comply to authority, or you will be punished for doing so. You'll be ostracized. You know, life is about doing what you're told. That's what the education system's done. And it teaches you that when you've left the education system, well, then you go out into the workforce and you work to make the system more efficient. You know, always respect authority, because then people will respect your authority. It teaches us to even have authority. You have jurisdiction over other people. You have authority over other people. You have a right of ownership over anyone less than you. That's what it's about, see, because it's back to commerce. Ownership, commerce. I own you. You are a lesser person than me because you work for me. So you will do what I say because I own your life. And that's what it's like, you know. See, when you take everyone's freedom away from them and you train them, you get human consciousness and you remove it from the art of itself, and you train it that life is about collecting stuff and it's about measuring yourself on the social ladder, suddenly you've taken away from people everything that they are, and you provide them with this false vision of what you are or what they are, which is all externalized. It's all based on the stuff that you've got, what you look like, the people you can hang out with, the car you drive, the house you own. Do you have a bigger front door than the guy next door? I mean, all this sort of stuff. I mean, it's ridiculous, you know. Yeah. So we're led away from this. And because this fractures and shatters human consciousness, it really does. So when you take people's power away from them to that extent, then you elevate them to the point where they have a little bit of power over somebody else. And this nurtures that little sociopathic spark that people may have inside them, because this system's designed to promote sociopathic behavior. So you give someone a little bit of authority over somebody else, and they will always abuse that power because it makes them feel like they are whole. But really, they're just subservient to the authority above them that gave them their perceived authority over somebody else. You know, I live my life in the manner that I don't have authority over anybody. I don't have jurisdiction over anybody, and nobody has any jurisdiction over me. If they wish to believe they do have a right of ownership or jurisdiction over me when I've committed no crime and I've done no harm, then this would indicate that they believe they have a right of ownership over me. This indicates that they're part of a slavery system. And this is the way I view it. And I always view myself as being living flesh. I'm not the name. I am a living flesh. I've had people say to me, "Where do you live?" And I say to them, "Is this a trick question? I mean, I live. I'm alive. I live right here where I'm standing at the moment. If I take a step to the left, then I'll be living there. You know, I live. Where do I live? I live in this vessel that I inhabit, this vessel of flesh and blood. This is where I live. You know, I am not the body. I am not the name. I am consciousness inhabiting this vessel, having this experience. Who are you? Why do you believe you have a right of ownership over this vessel? You know, when I've done no harm." And you can use this sort of stuff with the system. I mean, it's very hard to use against police officers, because police officers aren't overly intelligent. Unfortunately, they're just not. I've got an article on my website which shows that a police officer recently lost his appeal, or a guy who was applying for a job in the police lost his appeal to because he was rejected because he scored too high on the IQ test. And they're looking for people with IQs of around about 105. So it's no good arguing with these guys on the side of the road. See, I don't want to fight the system. I don't want to argue with anybody. But if I'm taken to a situation where I need to deal with the system, perhaps in a courtroom or something like that, then I will question these people why they believe they have a right of ownership over me. And I've done this on occasion, and I've always walked from the place. I've always been fine. I've never been incarcerated. I've never had any real trouble with the system. But I don't go out and fight the system, because to me the system's fiction. Why would I fight it? It's a cloud. It doesn't exist. It's a meme. It only exists in a book. If I fight it, I must believe that it's real. You know, so what? I'm fighting something which isn't really real. It's non-existential. So if you're fighting or attacking something which is non-existential, well, that's insanity, isn't it? Fear of the non-existential.
Fighting the illusion.
Exactly. So I don't fight the system, but if the system chooses to inflict itself on me, well, I'll question its authority, and then I'll walk away from it. And that's just the way I do it.
Absolutely. Now, you were talking about the education system, and you were talking about, you know, how children, as children in school, were graded. You get an A, you get a B, you get a C. You're also graded. You're in the first grade, you're in the second grade, you're in the third grade. Do you think that this also, in terms of the competition dynamic that plays itself out, in that there's a grading system, it's like a class system, and then later on in life, we abide to these class systems too, but it's all based upon that basic premise of competition?
Oh, it is. And it also builds you up and lets you down as well. I mean, if you look at the grading, even the grades of school, you know, you enter into school, you're in first grade, you're the little grommet that gets picked on by the other kids. And you have some guy from the higher classes who's appointed to look after you or something, you know what I mean? Because you're such a little grommet that people are going to pick on you otherwise.
That's right. That's true.
And as you go through and you gradually get up, you get to like the top of primary school. You're the top of the food chain. You know, this is pretty cool. You've been elevated to this status that you get to look after the little grommets now. Yeah. You know, so you know, you've been given a bit of authority over other people. You know what it feels like to be able to walk down to the lower kids and say, "Hey, you're messing up. I'm going to report you. You're going to be picking up papers for lunch. Don't mess with my little buddy here. You've got to answer to me." You get to do this macho sort of thing, you know. And then, yeah, you're the top of the food chain. And then you leave primary school, you enter high school, bang, you're the bottom of the food chain again. You're the grommet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's build up, build up, build up. Then you get to the top of the food chain in high school, and hey, it's again, you're the top of the food chain. You leave that, you go into the workforce, bang, you're the grommet. Do what you're told. So it's build up, let down, build up, let down, build up, let down. And the more you respect authority, the more you lick the boots of those above you, the more you're looked after, the more privileges you get. You see, so you're trained to be this way right through high school. It absolutely prepares you to go into a cutthroat business world and stomp on everybody below you and lick as many boots as you can to claw your way to the top, because life is about the one with the most wins.
And it seems as if the system needs that in order for the system to perpetuate itself.
Well, that's what the system is. I mean, the system's, like I said, it's about commerce. It's all about commerce. So, you know, they externalize. They teach you to externalize everything. It's not about you. It's about the stuff that you've got. It's about how much you exploit people and how much you make the system more efficient. That's a very important thing, because when you get to a business, you might start a business. Well, how do you make that business more efficient? You maximize profits and you minimize manpower. So you're dispelling humankind, casting people onto the trash heap, the more powerful you get. And you are making the system itself more efficient. So basically, in the end, humanity becomes obsolete. And people would say, well, this might be great. We can have whole factories running things, the Venus Project, everything robotized, you know. But if you've got a society that's based in commerce, if everything's robotized, then nobody works, and so everyone gets thrown on the trash heap. But the system's supposed to be here to support humanity. It's not us to support the system. That's what we do. We've been taught, because it's commerce-based, we're taught that we have to make our little pocket more efficient. And so, you know, the quality of products goes down and down and down. This is why everything's so cheap and breaks all the time now. Nothing's made properly. It's all made to break so they can keep perpetuating this economic model. And all of our whole experience has been reduced to commerce. And that's really the essence of the problem.
What about religious institutions? Do you think that religion has a role in terms of maintaining and perpetuating the system itself?
I do, absolutely. I totally disagree with monotheistic religion. That's just the way I am. I mean, each to their own. I can understand that there are probably good points in many points of religion and many aspects of religion, many good points in the teachings of those deities or leaders of monotheistic religion. There's a lot of good stuff there. But ultimately, if you look behind it, it's a system of control. It's a system of division. And even if you belong to any religious system, think about it, you know, Christian, Muslim, whatever, it'll tell you that you must love other people from other religions. It's all good. There's no problem with anybody else. You've got to love everybody. But you're special because you belong to this religion, so you're the only one going to heaven. So even though you must see everybody as equal, you're better than them.
Yes.
Right? And that is the underlying message in every single religion, because it's about division. You know, it's dividing the person who has this particular faith from, you're going to go to a better place than anybody else who has any other faith, but you must view all of them as equal to yourself. That sets up a huge schism in human consciousness straight away.
It's the contradiction itself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's a contradiction in terms just by belonging to the religion and the religion daring to tell you that you must love others and see them as equals to yourself. It's a completely twisted underlying message. So that creates a huge fracture in human consciousness right from the start. And that's one of the real dangers that I see in monotheistic religion. And it also, again, leads you away from the art of yourself, and it places responsibility for yourself, your life, your salvation, the things that you do, in the hands of an external source other than yourself. But really, I think it's all about you. It's all about what you do with the time that you're given. It's all about the legacy that you leave behind. It's about your art. We're missing that art. It all comes back to art. Art is so important, Lennon. It really is, because, like I said, the art of you, what you are, this is your art. What you're doing, the experiment that you're running with your wife, and you're showing people what a functional relationship looks like, and all the things that you're doing, this is your art. Mm-hmm. What you're doing with your lectures and stuff and having this show, this is your art. And it's the same with everybody. But, you know, often people, their art is going laying pipes in a road or something, and that's not, it's their job, it's not their art. You know, people will say, oh, who are you? Oh, I'm Joe Smith. Well, what do you do? I'm a plumber. Okay, Joe Smith, the plumber. Okay, that's what Joe Smith is. No, he's not a plumber. A plumber is what he has to do to survive in this field of commerce. What he is Joe Smith. He is the art form, the conscious expression of consciousness that is Joe Smith, but he's missing that because he's just a plumber, and people think he's just a plumber. He's just Joe Smith the plumber, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's taken the whole artistic statement of everybody away from themselves, and people are defined by what they do, but that's not what they are, you know?
It's just like we are all much more than these definitions that limit us in that sense. You know, the speaking of religion, you know, the thing I found interesting is that even within religions, you have divisions. So what I mean by that is, say, for instance, Christians, you have, you know, a Catholic, you have a Baptist, a Baptist. And then within all these different denominations, they argue amongst each other. And then it's like divisions upon divisions, you know, and then even within that, you have people within denominations who believe that they're the chosen people of that particular religion, and everyone else who's of another denomination, they're of a lower grade, so they're not the chosen people, and they're not going to heaven, and these types of things too. So what I'm getting at, when we talk about the division construct, I think that people have a misconception that just because you accept a particular faith, let's say, or a particular religion, and say Christianity, that somehow you won't be divided, or you won't be inclined to divide yourself from other people around the world who are non-Christian, but then also people who happen to also be Christian, but from a different denomination.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's amazing to see so many denominations within the one faith, all of which argue amongst each other, or which often have different books, even, like different versions of the Bible. So it's hard to figure out what's going on there. I mean, that's something they've got to figure out themselves. I've often looked at that one and just went, hey, well, I can't figure you guys out at all. You know? I mean, isn't it about the words that this one particular figure said?
Mm.
What's all this other noise that's surrounding that? You know, because it's just noise. It's all just noise, really. It's about the words said by this one man. So what are you doing about that? How are you applying that to your life? And I've never seen anybody, really, who is applying those philosophies to their own life. It's all about the book. It's all about their denomination. It's all about what the church said. And I believe it's all just a system of control and a system of division, like you say.
Mm. Another part of the system would be the entertainment industry. And we talked about that in a little bit already. But there were three main areas I wanted to have you speak on. And those three areas are television, the internet, and then music. You talked a little bit about music already. Television, it has had a profound influence on human consciousness, of course, and especially as it relates to mind control, controlling people's mental faculties. What are your thoughts on television?
Look, television's insidious. It's the most effective form of mind control that was ever invented, and that's why they put it in everybody's home.
Mm.
And now you've got even televisions that look at you now as well. You know, they've all got facial recognition and all this. Oh, this is great for your 3D stuff. You know, they'll give you an excuse why they're putting it in there. But really, it's just so they can spy on you. It's like the two-way TV sets that they had in 1984. But television, it programs people. They even call them programs. Oh, what's the next program?
Right, that's right. Mm-hmm.
They're telling you, they're programming you, there might be something to pay attention to here, folks, you know. But, you know, we just don't do that, do we? Oh, it's just the next program. Well, you know, they're programming, and people look at it and go, well, how is I programmed? It's just a story about this guy and that girl and this stuff they did, and, you know, how am I being programmed? But it's the subtext in the background. It's the things that they're implying that you're not noticing, because you're in this sort of a mode where you're in entertainment mode. Your guard is down. You're just looking at the surface story, but there's all of this stuff going on in the background, which is teaching you what to expect reality to be like. And then, you, of course, you get the news. I mean, the news is like a puppet show. It's theatre. I mean, they just tell you their version of what they believe is going on. Absolutely. And look, people think they watch the news, they think these reporters have actually gone out there and they've gone to this place and they've figured all this stuff out. No, they just get handed this line by the government. The government says, read this. And they read it.
Max, explain that. Because people think that they're out there doing, you know, they're out there and they're doing research, et cetera. But no, that's not the case at all. What do you mean by that?
Well, like, you know, you have, say, there's a scene in what's going on in Egypt, for example, and you'll have the anchor woman there or the anchor man there looking really serious on TV, and he'll be telling you about this situation, but he's just reading from a script, from a teleprompter that's telling him what to say, saying, look serious here and say this. So he does this, and then they switch to their online reporter, and there's a guy on the ground in Egypt with a live OB unit, and he's there, and he's talking, and he's saying this, and look, there's all these trucks behind me, and he's not really saying anything, and any information that he does give you has been, some guys come up from the government, and they've given him a piece of paper, and they said, say this. Now, he doesn't know. He doesn't know what he's going on. He's just saying what he's told to say, and he's commenting on the trucks in the background. Oh, my God, there's all these people everywhere. Well, yes, of course there is. It's a revolution. We already know that. Tell us something. You know, but it all looks very, very fanciful, and you know, you think, oh wow, turmoil. But these people are just reading what they're told to read. It may be completely different over there. If you knew someone on the street there that would actually tell you what was going on, you'd find it is completely different to what they tell you. Most of the news is just theatre. They just make it up. And these people are just reading what they're told to read, and they're saying what they're told to say. So they're giving people a particular view, a particular version of what's going on overseas. And none of the people that watch the news have ever been there. They don't know what's actually going on. They just know what the television tells them is going on. And so that's what they believe reality is. And they go and they talk about it amongst themselves to the office, and it becomes a general consensus. And suddenly someone from over there comes back and tells you something different. You go, oh, conspiracy theorist. You know, it's amazing. It's incredible programming. But the most important thing, again, is the subtext. Even with the news readers, you'll find there's often two anchors. And they'll give you a story. There'll be a man and a woman there. They'll give you a bit of a story. They'll tell you a news item. And then they'll give each other a little look or a little nod, or they'll just say some little quick comment, one or two words after it, and it will mold.
Absolutely.
The thought of the people. Like, oh, okay, yeah, I agree with what she said. Ah, that's how you look at it. Okay, now I see the bigger picture. Mm. They've just been programmed. They've just been told what to think, and they've been given this view that this nice lady up there, look, I love her. Look at her hair. Isn't she lovely? She couldn't say the right thing. She's here in my house talking to me every night. I like her. She's a lovely girl. They watch the news just because their favorite people are on there, and then when these people offer a tiny little quip, they just go with it. And that's subtle programming, and it's there in everything that you watch. And when you become aware of it, it just stands out so much. It's amazing.
Absolutely. I call that the global motion picture stage show. It really is. There's people, we watch, you know, independent films and think that it's kind of real. Then they may watch a Hollywood film. They think it's real. They may watch a blockbuster Hollywood film. They think that it's real. But then there's also this global motion picture stage show that plays itself out, usually in the form of mainstream and alternative media and mainstream news in particular, mainstream and alternative news in particular. And people think that everything that is stated there is actually true and factual. And yet the anchor women, the reporters, they are simply reading from a script.
Absolutely. That's the thing. People just don't realize that. I mean, a great example was the first Gulf War. That fake news footage of the guys putting on the gas mask.
Right? Yeah.
It was incredible. They weren't even there in the Gulf, and they're there acting like they are, and they're dramatizing this whole thing. They had no idea what was going on. They were reading from the teleprompter, and they were being told to act out like they were in a war zone. And it was so badly done, it was ridiculous. But, yeah, it just shows how much they actually do this. And now they've got the technology to do it in a lot more sophisticated manner. So, I mean, you shouldn't believe anything that you see on TV. I've been involved in news stories. I've been there when things have happened, and I've seen the report on the television, and it's never anything like what actually happened.
Wow.
It, You know, it's somebody's opinion, and it's what they want the public to believe, and it's usually about, you know, shaping the public's opinion and molding their perception and often putting them into a state of fear. I mean, fear-based mind control is the basis of the whole system. Even when you look at commerce, the fact that we've been reduced to commerce, it's all about fear of shortage, fear of scarcity. Got to collect more stuff, got to have more paper, got to have the biggest pile, the biggest castle, so that if the world falls out from under everybody, it's going to fall out from under me last. You know, it's fear-based mind control, the whole system. Even through the grading system, fear-based mind control. Am I going to pass the test? Mm-hmm. You know, the way when children come into their sexuality, it's all about, you know, what you look like and how much stuff you've got, and we're told, no, don't look at the opposite sex. Sex is such a natural thing, but it's turned into fear-based mind control as well. We're very, very manipulated by sexuality, far, far more than people believe. You know, and it all comes down to fear-based mind control.
Absolutely. Very well said. Yeah, we're getting a little bit of feedback. Do you have your speaker at all?
No.
Okay. Yeah, maybe something I need to tweak here on the mixer. But it's not that pronounced. Okay, so you were talking about television. What about internet as another tool, I guess we can say, that contributes to the control network itself?
Well, the internet's great for finding out what everybody thinks about everything else. It's great for finding out who's connected to who all around the planet. I mean, it's been a great tool for disseminating information. It's been a huge boon to the truth movement. You were actually able to get this information out to people. But again, it's got a darker side as well, because it's as much as it's made the world smaller and it's made us able to communicate with each other. I mean, here we are on the other side of the planet from each other having a live conversation, and there's all these people from all around the world listening into it. I mean, this is fantastic stuff. But with the kids and stuff, with the young guys, you know, they're playing these games and they're communicating with each other on Skype, and they're not actually communicating in the real world, so they're losing a lot of their actual personal skills. Mm. They're often letting themselves go as well, because it's not about appearance. You don't really have to look good to talk to someone on the internet. It's just about who you are. It's about what you say. So you don't have that judgment. You know, people often judge other people what they look like. You know, you're fat, you're small, you're short, you're thin, you're black, you're white, whatever. You know, it's this judgment that people have. But on the internet, there isn't any of that. You're just who you are. You can remake yourself into what you want to be. And a lot of people have done this, and they can react very, very well when they're chatting to each other, but you put them in a room together and they find it very, very difficult to look at each other, to talk to each other. So it's actually creating a real separation of people. It's bringing us together in a virtual world, leading towards a transhumanist singularity, Ray Kurzweil, transcendent man, nightmare, Borg future, mm-hmm. that people don't really realize. That's what it's doing, because it's making people to be, they're feeling more comfortable in the virtual world than what they do in the real world.
Mm.
And so again, they're missing out on the art of themselves. It's not only are they externalizing themselves, but they're externalizing it into a mainframe, a cybernetic link up. And this is all leading towards transhumanism. I think that's the insidious side of the internet. For all of its wonderful things that it can do, people have to realize that it isn't their life. You shouldn't be spending all of your time on the internet, because the people that you're talking to, you know, they're actual people that are in a real world that exists right outside your door, and you can actually walk to those people and meet those people and communicate with them in a real manner. And we can't lose that. We can't lose our humanity in this technological evolution that we're going through. You know, we've got to be careful of how we combine this and how we use these tools. You know, and again, you've got to look at the darker side of it and see what's actually being done to human consciousness and the separation that's occurring because of it.
Mm. Can we delve into that just a little bit before we move on to the next point in terms of entertainment? Technology, I have a series, The Borg Agenda 7 of 9, The Sexualization of Technology, and it addresses a lot of the transhumanist programming and the overdependency on technology. And I've already stated that it's not that technology is necessarily bad, it's when we become so dependent on technology that it impedes upon our ability to be creative. Can you further elaborate on this in terms of human consciousness? How is it possible that something like technology that is, you know, it can be a machination or some kind of a mechanical device, some kind of a metallic device, some kind of computerized device, how can that impact human consciousness?
Well, it's left brain again. It's this love of machines that we seem to have developed, machines that we believe serve us, but obviously, I mean, sometimes they don't. Sometimes, I don't know, it's this fascination. It's always actually puzzled me because I'm fascinated with little devices and boxes and little tools, and we all love to see a little engine or a little motor or a miniature this or a miniature that. It's very, very strange. It's a really, really left brain analytical reality. You know, we're only focused on mechanical sort of art and mechanical development and technological development and being led away from our inner art again. I think it's all due to that. I think it's from a loss of our right brain. So there's so many things that shut down our right brain. Our right brain is very, very important. And even with all of the artificial lights and all the stuff that we're subject to, the flickering lights, all lights flicker. All fluorescent lights, car lights, traffic lights, everything, they all flicker. If you video record them, you'll see there's a flicker rate with all of them. Mm-hmm. And this shuts down your corpus callosum and stops your left and right brain talking to one another. And because we're given this, like it's drummed into us through school, through the indoctrination we get at school, it's all mechanical. We're even taught that basic shapes, when you go to school, grade one, probably even in kindergarten, that basic shapes are squares, circles, triangles. These aren't basic shapes. These are man-made constructs. Basic shapes are spirals and waves. Basic shapes exist in nature. So we're taught this geometric, mathematical, analytical reality right from the word go. And I think that's a lot of it. That's why we find this stuff so fascinating, because we can't access the other side of our brain and view how this mechanical device actually fits in with this natural, beautiful, paradisical world that we live on. And I also believe that there's things that have been taken away from us, like higher senses, our instincts. Yeah. I think we should have the same instincts as animals do. You find a lot of tribal cultures do.
Mm-hmm.
You find animals will leave an area before there's a disaster, an earthquake or a tsunami. They will go up in the mountains, and so do the tribal people. And all the city folks stay there and drown. And they say, well, why? That's just instinct. Well, why don't we have that instinct?
Yeah.
Because we're locked in this left brain reality. We can't read the energy field around us because right brain is energetic. It connects to the whole collage of reality and processes it in an entirely different way. And so we're led away from that. You know, oh, the tsunami's coming. We'll build a mechanical device to save us. You know, it's just the way we think. We're just trained to be this way. A lot of it, I believe, is through our education. But there's also chemical dumbing down. I mean, there's so many things, electromagnetic, chemical, biological. There's so many things that are done to us to keep us shut down. I mean, they've got to work very, very hard at this. We're bombarded from every possible angle, through our food, through toxins in the environment, through fluoride, through electromagnetic soup that we're swimming in, through our left brain education, through television, through flickering lights, I mean, everything they can think of to keep us, you know, out of reality and away from our connection to the earth. And even through the loss of shamanism and all of those ancient cultures, which they would call pagan. This was the main thing that the Crown Corporation, when it was formed, did, was wipe out this any connection to the earth, because that is all opens the right brain. And if we're using our whole brain, I think we would view the world in a completely different way.
Yeah, probably a much more holistic way, most definitely.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of us are doing it. This is what you're doing. And we all have our ways. That's why it's so beautiful with what you do and what I do and what so many other people are doing, because we're offering our perspective of how we've seen it. We've seen through the maze. And if we offer it in our way, well, perhaps that will help other people understand it from that perspective. And they put it all together and the light bulb just goes off and they go, aha, now I get it. Now I see my own potential. And that's really what it all comes down to, different ways of finding people, helping people reach their own potential.
Wow, very well said. And speaking of that potential, you know, one of the things I noticed, and this is getting back to the internet and even cell phone use and iPads and iPods, is I've seen with the younger generation, and I'm 37 years old now, so I'm so distant from that generation, but I've noticed this compared to when I was growing up, the level of interaction, humanistic interaction that people had, though it was much less than probably my parents, in terms of my generation, this next generation, it's almost like an over dependency on technology to such a degree that if you put children in, or you put this new generation inside a room, and you hand them technological devices, they will go for the technological devices and ignore each other.
They will, and not only that, if they want to talk to each other, they'll do so via the technological device.
Yes.
I know people that are in the same room that will chat to each other on Skype.
Yes, I've actually seen this in texting, this thing texting. They'll be in the same, or they've been in the same house texting each other back and forth. So when we talk about humanistic development, do you think that that can impede upon this progression as a species in terms of our, you know, intellectual process, et cetera?
Absolutely, absolutely, because it externalizes the whole thing. I mean, even the spelling, the internet spelling, the short text that people use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's removing all creative ability away from us. I mean, even with the lack of consciousness that we've got, a lot of this is done through language because our language is very limited. We don't have spiritual understandings conveyed to us very well in English. You know, we just don't have words that explain these inner feelings and these inner mechanisms and this inner technology that we have. We don't have the words to explain it. This is why when you're talking to an Indian person or someone for a Hindi or something like that, they'll say, oh, it's very difficult to explain the concept of Dharma and all this stuff. It's very difficult to explain to you in English because English is a very mechanical language that disconnects you from reality. You listen to someone speak Italian or Spanish or it all sounds like one word half the time. It's one big, long, flowing word of many syllables. It's a very, very flowing, very artistic, very right brain languages. They have a whole different emotion that they can convey, emotions that people who speak English don't even understand. So when you look at that, how we've been limited by that understanding of our language, now you take that and you turn it into this text language. Well, where's it going? If a person's understanding of reality is based on their understanding of the language, and they think in a left-brain reality, all left-brain education, so they're always thinking in language. They're not thinking in art. They're not thinking energetically. They're thinking always in language. We're trained to think in language, that inner chatter that's going on all the time in everybody's heads. That's how we're trained to think. So we think in words. We look at the television. We look at the door. We spell door in our head. We know what it is. We analyze everything in split seconds, like microseconds. It's all language that we're analyzing our whole reality. So if our understanding of reality is based on our understanding of the language, and now language is being more and more reduced and more refined and turning into this text language, which doesn't convey any real meanings of anything, you can see where this is going. It's removing all creativity away from people, all self-expression away from people, all inner understanding, spiritual understandings, all connection to nature, all connection to reality. It's removing it all from people in very, very subtle ways through the use of language. This is why English has been pushed out and made the main language on Earth now. You know, almost everybody speaks English because English is that mechanical disconnect. You know, English is attractive because if you do learn English, well, look, you get all these nice flash American movies you can watch without subtitles. So everyone wants to know English. All the kids want to know English. They all want to be part of this big, bang, bright culture. So all of the kids are becoming, you know, they're getting pulled into this adolescent culture, and they're getting trained to think in a mechanical way. That's the way it's going. And texting is a big part of it because, like I said, it reduces the language down to almost its bare shells. You know, spiritual understandings, no real meanings, no ambiguity in any of the words, no subtle nuances, none of that, no philosophy. Forget that stuff.
So very true. So very true. And y'all have been listening to Max Egan here on LennonAnna.com. Again, today is Saturday, July 13, 2013. And I want to remind people, we already had a couple of questions come in already. If you have any questions for Max, you can click on my name, Lennon Honor, in the chat room and send us a private message. We'll do a segment a little bit later to get to some of those questions. You talked about the financial institutions here and commerce, et cetera. I think you've outlined this already pretty clearly. How big of an influence, though, is this having on human potential? We're inundated. It's almost like we're set up in a maze, and within this maze, we're in competition with other people who are trying to kind of get to the next level in this maze, and it's all about, you know, materialism, getting to the next level of materialism, getting to the next materialism, and it doesn't matter who I have to step on in order to do it, and then there's always this sense of scarcity. How big of an impact is this monstrosity that we call the economic system, this global economic system, how big of an impact is that having on the human progression as it relates to our spiritual progressions or even on a humanistic level as we relate to each other on a daily basis?
Absolutely huge. It's the glue that holds the whole system together. Without that, people would actually have time to think. People would have time to stop and say, hey, wait a minute. Why am I doing this? Why am I running? Why are people so busy all the time? They're always running to reach a certain level on the social ladder. And they're trained to step over each other. I mean, often they have to step over each other to get to the top of the pile because the economy is crashing. Things are getting worse. It's more and more expensive. I've got to collect more and more paper because I've got to be able to survive. I've got to be able to look after my family. We're living within this system, so it's all about stuff. The more stuff I can accumulate, the more I've got to fall back on should I need to do so. So, and you've never got time because you know, the more you, any time you think you might be able to relax, well, the price of everything goes up, so you've got to run a little bit faster. I mean, back in the old days, I mean, when I was a child, my father could work 4 days a week, 5 days a week, or 3 or 4 days a week and support a family of four. Mm. And by the time I'm a teenager, well, you've got to have both parents working. And then now you've got to have both parents and the kids with after school jobs just to pay the rent.
Mm.
You know, so it's keeping people more and more busy. And I think a lot of it is the more consciousness comes online and the more people start to question the way reality is and why we have to do this, they just keep them more and more running faster and faster on the treadmill because then you don't have time to stop and think. That's a huge part of it. And of course it creates this division in people as well because, you know, I've got more stuff than you, so I'm a better person than you. You know, mm-hmm. You're a lesser person because you have less stuff. Mm-hmm. It's all about stuff, you know. If I've got more stuff than you, now I can go to the country club and then I can rub shoulders with these big guys. Hey, they've got more stuff than me, so I really like them. I want to get to where they are because it's all about stuff. Then you get to the end of life and you go, wow, I've got this big pile of stuff now. But what was it for? Did I know myself? Did I find myself? You'll sit there and wonder what it's all about. And those are the lucky ones that can still able to think and maybe wonder what it was all about. And they go, well, hang on, I've got all this stuff, but I missed out on me. I missed out on my family because I was so worried about trying to provide for my family that I forgot what my family wanted, which was me. That's what I should have provided for them was myself.
Mm.
I missed out on that, and I missed out on experiencing my partner and experiencing my children, experiencing the art of my own life. And what is my legacy? My legacy is this big pile of stuff that isn't going to mean anything to anybody once I die. The only thing that's going to mean anything to anybody is the perceived ownership of this piece of land, which will go to my kids. It'll all get lost in tax. The government will end up having it anyway because the whole system's designed to implode. You know, you've got a monetary system that has tricked people into believing that their life is all about the accumulation of material possessions and that they can actually own a piece of the earth. But the money system is designed to implode. Eventually, it's going to implode, and it's going to transfer the perceived ownership of that piece of earth into the hands of the person who issues the money. And then you'll believe that they actually own the earth. You'll believe that they own it because you believe that the earth can be owned. But it can't. You know, your piece of land where you live, I mean, what if you're not the owner of it? What if you're the custodian of that piece of land? It belongs to you and your family. Your family is the custodian of that particular piece of paradise there. And it will always stay in the custodianship of your family, and you will love and nurture and treasure that land, and it will provide for you everything you need if you treat it with love.
Mm.
This would be such a different way of looking at the land. It's not something I own that I can exploit. If I own it, I've got to exploit it because I've got to make paper in order to pay to be alive. So I've got to find some way of exploiting this piece of land or exploiting the people around me in order to collect enough paper so I can claw onto this piece of land that I perceive I own and really believe that I do own it. It's all about my stuff here, you know. Mm. This is what we're trained to be, and it's not who we are. But you got people who run this system, they're insane and they're crazy. They're totally locked into this left brain reality. Now, even the guys at the top who actually puppeteer the money system, they probably know what's going on. But below that, the bankers, the politicians, a lot of them believe the stuff is real. And they will keep going and they will exploit this planet and every single person on it until the earth looks like the moon. And then they will still be sitting there saying, oh my God, we're going to have to go and find another planet out there with people on it to exploit because I still owe money to the bank.
Wow.
That's the way they think. They're that locked into it that they actually believe it's that real that they will destroy the whole universe in order to pay off their bills.
So that's a very fascinating analysis there. I'm gonna have to listen back to this. Wow. Let me ask, what about the political arena? Because we've talked about the externalization of power, and this is one of the major topics that I address in my work is how we are so led and misguided, really, to always externalize power. How does the politicians and the political arena play into this?
Well, you know, unfortunately, we've got a system whereby we need managers for our infrastructure. We've got a pretty complicated system here. You know, it's big cities with people living there. Stuff's got to be managed. Roads have got to be looked after. You know, garbage has got to be picked up. Food's got to be on the supermarket shelves. This takes management. So we need governance to be able to do this. But people have been basically pushed into this big city structure where they've lost all of their self-determination. They've lost all of their life skills, basically. That's a huge thing that's happened in the last 150 years is a loss of life skills. That's what big cities have done, is they've taken away your ability to be able to fend for yourself and support yourself and be all that you can be, and they've created you, they've created for you a dependency on a system which is essentially a fictional system which doesn't care about you, which uses you to exploit, to turn your life into commerce. And this has been a gradual thing. And the politicians, I mean, they just find ways of making it more efficient. But the most important thing about politics is that these are parents. You know, we leave our parents and we look for new parents. We find them in politicians. You manage my life for me. Oh, you've not done a very good job of looking after my life. I'm going to vote you out. I'm going to vote this new guy and I'm going to get him to look after my life because I don't want to have to do it. And not only do I don't want to have to do it, I don't know how to do it, you know. And that's what the political system has done. It's created a dependency on parents which really don't have your best interests at heart. And it's taken, again, away from the art of yourself, away from your self-determination, your life skills, your ability to be able to be born into this perfect world and be all that you can be, and have the world just present itself to you and for you to make of that as you will. You know, back in the 150 years ago, we all used to have life skills. Every person could go into the wild and they could survive. They knew how to do it. They knew how to grow food. They knew how to hunt. They knew how to raise a family. They knew how to do the basic things in life. All of that's been taken away from us now through this system. So it's a very, very interesting situation that we're in. Now, we need to address the system that we've got. But we need to find a way of reining it in to do so. We can't just pull it down and crash it. We need to kind of rein these governments back under control and, I believe, get all the toxins and the environmental pollution out of our system and lead us back to a position, maybe over a period of two or possibly three generations. Once the toxins are removed, I think we would get to a position where we didn't need the system. We'd realize that we didn't need it. Mm. We need to really open things up. Like I said, we're not going to find remedy within the political system. We really believe we can pull down one puppet and put up a new puppet. But it's not going to work. We're just externalizing our power again. Really, it should be self-determination. It should be self-governance. But you can only have self-governance in a society where people are responsible. You're only going to get that where people actually respect themselves and respect the people around them. I really believe that when you respect yourself, truly respect yourself and understand that it's okay for you to have made mistakes, it's okay for all that stuff to have happened. It doesn't matter what you did. It matters what you're aware of and what you do now. That is the important thing. And respect yourself. No one's been given an even playing field. You can't judge yourself by your actions. You can't judge the times in your life when you're a train wreck when you were a kid. I mean, we all were. You can't judge that because you weren't given an even playing field. You're given this psychopathic system and you're told to make it work. It's all about commerce. You've got to exploit people and you've got to make it work. But what if you're a naturally giving person, a naturally caring person, a naturally spiritual person? How do you fit in that? You don't. You just got to try to make it work, and you can't. So you end up a misfit, you know, a misfit by society's standards anyway. Mm. You find most misfits are some of the most beautiful and gentlest people that you'd ever meet. They've just been not given an even playing field. And so you've got to be prepared to forgive yourself and respect yourself, because I believe when you truly find that spark in yourself and truly learn to respect yourself in that manner, then respect for other people comes by default, because you realize that all of the problems that you have were programs. These are all programs that people are running. Most people in society are programs, so you can't judge them for it. And I really believe that respect is the key. This will change everything. We can change the world in 3 seconds if we simply respected each other and changed our perspective of how reality works, you know?
Absolutely. You had gave reference earlier to chemical manipulation. What do you mean by this? Because you said toxins in the sense of toxins within the political system, but then what about toxins or chemical manipulation, let's say GMO foods or what have you? Can you elaborate on that?
Well, look, GMO foods are absolutely insidious. Every single species that they've tried GMO foods on, within three generations, it's caused defects, inability to reproduce, all sorts of stuff. I think a lot of GM food is about population culling, but it's also creating an environmental holocaust through the world. Like it's killing a lot of the bees. It's infecting a lot of normal crops as well. They're all becoming GM. It's like creating a singularity, you know. They're creating merging everything together with nanotechnology and through genetics and the genetic manipulation of ourselves. You know, when you eat food with suspect DNA, you take that into yourself. You assimilate that yourself. You find a lot of animals won't eat GM food. They won't eat GM corn. They won't eat any GM stuff. You know, even sweets and lollies that the children buy, I used to drop one of them on the path when I was a kid and the ants would be all over it in 10 seconds. Now you drop one on the path and the ants walk around it.
Wow.
They don't touch it, you know, because it's full of aspartame and all sorts of carcinogens. These things create incredible blockages in the body. They create fungal growths in the body and they lock down your endocrine system. They lock down your phylogenetic memory. They lock down all of the higher codes and higher things you should have running in your body. You've got fluoride, which calcifies your pineal gland, stops you experiencing a lot of higher senses. There's so much chemical manipulation and biological manipulation through the food that we eat, the toxins in our environment. And again, the electromagnetic soup, all the microwaves that we're swimming in as well. This is a huge part of it. These are toxins, and they infect you just as much as biological toxins because everything you experience is electromagnetic. You know, you're an electrical being inhabiting a flesh and blood physical body. But everything you experience, every thought, every feeling, every taste, every smell, everything, it's all electrical impulses that are sent around your body. That's how you when you touch the bench, you can feel that because of the electrical impulse that goes to your brain. So it's all electromagnetic. So, of course, you can be affected electromagnetically. So when you couple all of this biological soup that we've got inside us, like literally hundreds, some people thousands of toxins, thousands of different types of bacteria that shouldn't be in their body, all a product of this environment. And I believe it's a huge experiment. They're just messing with everything, merging it all together, nanotechnology, all sorts of stuff. There's all sorts of things going on. And when you think of things such as Ray Kurzweil, when he talks about transcendent man and creating a singularity, he's not just talking about humankind. He's talking about a universal singularity. It's merging everything with nanotechnology, so merging everything together. So when you really look at GM food and how they're doing things like splicing fish genes into tomatoes, human genes into potatoes, all sorts of stuff like this. So what's this all about? Why would they be putting fish genes in tomatoes? Why would they be putting human genes into potatoes? Why? It's about merging everything together, getting the whole gene pool and splicing it all and merging it all into a singularity. It comes back to transhumanism.
Do you think that vaccines play a major role in this?
Absolutely. Vaccines set up a certain biological environment, a certain genetic environment, which will create an environment in the body so that body will react in certain ways when certain toxins come into contact with it. You know, it sets up certain genetic environments, all part of the experiment, because everybody's genetics is different. They don't really know what they're going to come up with. They know they're going to come up with some sort of singularity, some sort of merging of man with machine, with nature, with everything. But they don't really know what it is. They're just seeing what works. And, yeah, it absolutely sets up incredible genetic environments within people, makes them subject to all, you know, susceptible to all sorts of different diseases. Because, you know, I mean, the medical industry, it's all about selling you drugs. They don't want you well. They want you sick. So they give you GM food. They give you these vaccinations, which harm your immune system, all this stuff, set up these genetic environments, and then they start feeding you more toxins because it's profitable to do so. They reduce everybody to commerce in every single aspect that they can to make money out of people and keep you on the treadmill, keep you locked down, keep you not thinking clearly. This is what it's all about.
Now, I know we talked about this earlier, and I wanted to get to some specific topics dealing with this issue of the divisions that are created. So we looked at, you spoke about the religion aspect and the institutions, how there's divisions, you know, between people who follow particular religions and people who don't, but then also people who follow particular religions, and they may be Christian, but they're different denominations and the divisions there. You also talked about entertainment, how television and the different levels of division that it creates, and the internet, how it divides, you know, people from having this organic experience. In many cases, you talked about education. And how there's a division that's set up, and I think a lot of the other divisions are really, they come out of this early education where we're put into classes, and you know, you're in your first grade, second grade, third grade, and you gave reference to how the people above think that they're superior to the people below, and it establishes a control network, etc. One of the things I want you to kind of get into from your perspective when we talk about division is this concept of race. And this is a big topic, and it's something that always seems to come up. I don't know what is it going to take for this species to get beyond this concept of genetic-based race, if you will, which isn't backed by scientific evidence or proof. It is a modern invention. It's only been around since the 1600s, and yet people embrace this concept of race to such a degree that we divide ourselves, we classify ourselves and divide ourselves in extreme ways. What is your take on race, and how does it fit into the acceptance of race fit into the controlled network?
Look, racial division, I believe, is so contrived and so programmed. It's such a construct. Actually, the show that I did yesterday's radio show, I related a childhood experience that I had. My first great friend at school was a young girl by the name of Helen Kimber. And when I first went to school in grade one at school, I met this little girl, and we just got on like a house on fire. She was the realest person I'd ever met. And she just had these bright eyes and this bright smile. But the other kids wouldn't hang around us, and I ended up getting beaten up at school, and I had all sorts of problems, and my mother didn't want me to play with this girl and all sorts of things, and I never knew why. And it wasn't until I was older, I was about probably 17 or 18, and I thought about it, and I went, wow, she was black. Mm. I don't know whether she was Aboriginal or whether she was from India or where she was from, but she had dark skin, and I didn't notice that. When I was a child, I couldn't tell you that she was black. It didn't register that she was a different skin color. Mm. She was just, I saw into her eyes, and I went, this is a real person. Wow, a real person, my first real person. You know? It was great. I met this little girl, and we just got on so well. And we weren't allowed to see each other. We weren't allowed to play. Because I'd get beaten up by other kids, and I couldn't understand why anyone didn't like me. I just couldn't understand it. So I believe racism is so programmed. It's so ridiculous. I got friends for all around the world, all different, red, blue, green. I mean, just everybody. I have no problem with anybody. I just don't see people's skin color. It's just not something that I've done. You know, it's just not where I go. So I believe it's absolutely programmed. And it's a terrible, terrible form of division, you know. And if you look at some of the experiments I did, the Stanton University experiments, where they said that blonde-haired, blue-eyed kids were more intelligent or more dumb or something. There was an experiment they did where they divided people by hair color and eye color and said these people are more intelligent than those people. And they did an experiment to see how it would go. And the way people get sucked into this domination of others, this programming, it's incredible. They did another one where they made people prison warders and other people convicts. And the brutality that we saw from the prison warders and stuff, it was incredible, this peer group pressure. You know, because, as I said, you take people's power away from them. Take your power away from you. So you're a black man, so you're a lesser person, and so suddenly all the black people get together, and they create this huge, surging, massive anger, which creates a hierarchy in itself, which then has to prove itself against the other. So you create this conflict all the way through. It's so programmed, and it's with all sorts of different races. I mean, you see what happened in World War II with the Poles and the Germans and the Austrians, and I mean, it's ridiculous, you know, the amount of division we have because you come from on the other side of this fictional line on this map, or you have a slightly different pigmentation to your skin, so therefore, you know, you're a lesser person. It's absurd. I don't know where it came from, but I don't think it's a natural thing. I mean, I don't think it's something that we would ever come up with because, like I said, my experience when I was a child, I didn't see the skin color. I didn't even notice. I didn't even figure it out until I was a teenager that that's what the problem was. It took me that long to actually even notice that this girl had a different pigmentation to her skin, you know. So I think it's absolutely programmed. It's something that has been taught to people. It's been constructed. It's been taught. It's insidious.
Yeah. And I have to ask, I've had this experience with my work early on where people, before they knew what I looked like, they were, oh, your documentary was awesome. I get emails, and I didn't expect people to even have any care for what I was producing then. But I remember I had gotten an email from someone. It was a male based upon how he was talking. And he expressed how he really appreciated my work, and he was very thankful for the work that I was doing. And then maybe about, about 4 months later, it might have been two to 4 months later, I can't remember, it was so long ago, I got another email from the same individual. And he began to say how, well, look, you know, I thought that you were white. I didn't know that you were black. I saw the picture of you. I saw a video of you on YouTube. I didn't know that you were black. So I'm going to have to reconsider your work. In other words, because I just found out that you're black, everything that I said before about, you know, your work being important or valuable to me, I'm going to have to reconsider that. And I found that to be very telling. And I wanted to ask you a question. Have you had that experience, because maybe you look a certain kind of way, that, you know, maybe certain people who may consider you to be separate of them because of how you look, maybe they're not inclined to listen, or maybe they devalue your work because of how you look?
Look, that's why I remained anonymous for so long, because I always used to say, look, it's not about me. When you see what a person looks like, you often judge that person by their looks. Oh, yes, I like him. He's a nice-looking man. I like what he says. Oh, no, I don't like him. He's got a beard. I'm not going to listen to him anymore. it's the way they do it. The way they're trained to do it. People are programmed to do this. It's about what you look like, you know, how I can measure you on the social scale. Is my life going to be cooler if I hang around with this guy? Mm. He's a nice-looking guy. Is he up there on the social rung? How is my life going to be better if I involve my life with this person? This is what you get when you look at someone and you judge them by their looks or by their skin color. You know, how is it going to affect you personally? You don't listen to the message. The message is the heart. The message is the feel. The message is consciousness speaking to you. What is in that message? Why have you been drawn to this work? What is in there for you? It doesn't matter about the person. That's why I wanted to remain anonymous for so long, because I used to say it's not about me. It doesn't matter who I am. I am nobody. I'm you. I am living proof that you don't have to be somebody to have a voice and to speak out. You just got to be prepared to speak. And if you have something that you believe is worth saying and you believe will help other people find their path, then speak your truth. Please do so. But I don't care what you look like. I don't care what I look like. It's not about that. It's about the message. It's about this particular state of human consciousness and what's in there from the message. That's why I wanted to remain anonymous. You know, when it came out, I thought, oh, well, there you go. Now people, they're probably judging me by my looks, and they're probably doing it. But, I don't pay attention to it. I keep telling people it's not about me. And now that my face is out there, people are saying, oh, can we do next interview? Can we have you on cam, you know? And I'm like, no, I don't do camera interviews. It's not about me. Yeah, but you're out now. People can see you. I go, look, I don't care. I don't want them to see me. It's not about that. If they, what's this all about? Why do they need to see me? Listen to what I'm saying. It doesn't matter what I look like. It doesn't matter who I am. Listen to what I'm saying, you know?
Mm. Mm. You know, Max, this interview, it's I've done a lot of interviews, and I mean, as you speak, I'm smiling.
Well, that's good. That's good, brother.
You know, and I just have to just catch myself. Okay, wait, I'm smiling right now. You know, throughout this interview, I don't know what it is. I really do appreciate it. I'm sure the other people appreciate too the everything that you're sharing here during this interview. I wanted to, if you can address it, I know we talked a little bit about this when we were together on a radio interview show. And this is a touchy topic, especially for those of us who are out here trying to help people in particular ways. Okay, so for instance, you know, you do it in your particular way with your particular vantage point, and I do it in my particular way, my particular vantage point. But then there's also like a movement, what people may classify as a movement of people who are doing this and this same type of thing from their vantage point. And then there's a title that's been kind of given to it loosely. Some people buy to the title, some people don't. Some are kind of pushed into the title, some people embrace the title, what have you. And that is what people have termed loosely the truth movement. And one of the things I wanted to talk about here, because we talked about the different levels of division, and that is that oftentimes what we perceive to be the control network, the opposition to that, even within the opposition to the control network, even within the opposition, there is also these levels of division. And in this sense, I wanted to talk about this because one of the things that I found, at least within this particular paradigm of what we call the truth movement, I know this is a very touchy topic for a lot of people, is that the amount of division that is there and the amount of bickering and the amount of human disconnect that I've seen has been quite staggering. And I was wondering if you can speak to this particular issue. If you're not comfortable with doing it, that's fine too. But I think that it is an important topic to address here.
Well, look, there is a lot of division in the truth movement. I prefer to call it the alternative research community. People who believe that they have the truth Yeah, well, you know, we're still finding out the truth. There are many truths, and each person holds their own truth. Each person holds their own perspective of what's going on. All we can do is connect the dots in the best way possible, lay the cards on the table and say, hey, what do you think? You know, but there's many people who will believe that if you disagree with me on any, to any degree, you know, on any topic, you're part of the New World Order, you're part of the opposition, and then I'll start making hate videos about you. When really all you've got to go on, I mean, you might have a different perspective to me because you're a different person to me. You live in a different part of the planet. You've probably had different information, and this is what you've assimilated, and this is the conclusions you've come to because of what you've assimilated and the conclusions you've had, you know. But I've had different information. I've looked at different stuff. I live in a different part of the planet. I have a completely different perspective. So let's put them together and see where the common ground is. We can find, if we all work together, we can find a way through this. But if someone has a different opinion to you, well, it's because they're a different person to you. No one's ever going to have the same opinion as you, not exactly. No one will ever see life from your perspective because that is what makes you you. So why would we view our perspective as valid if our perspective is one that invalidates the perspective of others? Because their perspective is valid too. Everybody's perspective is valid, and it's all based on what information they've been exposed to and what they've been able to assimilate and the conclusions that they've come to. There might be something that they haven't looked at yet that they go, oh my God, now that I see this, well, that puts a whole different light on it. But people often get locked into this and they go, oh, this is it. I've made myself. I've remade myself on the internet to a person who has this opinion. And then when something comes along that causes them to question that opinion, oh, that's disinformation. I'm locked into this. I'm locked into this. I know who I am. I know where I'm going. I've made myself. This is who I am. Don't interfere with it. You know, and that's unfortunately where people go. So they're not, that they believe it's the truth community. It's my truth. The community around my truth. But it isn't. It's the alternate research community. It's research. We're all trying to find our way through this. And again, if you're looking at all these problems, well, why are you even looking at them? Are you looking at it because it's like a giant spy novel and you want the next installment? Or are you actually seeing these problems as solutions? See, this is why I don't present my stuff from a perspective of fear. I mean, even though we do have a lot to be concerned about, it's nothing to be feared. Because if you fear something, you often get locked up and, oh, no, I'm going to hide myself away from this thing that I fear, which is usually something that doesn't exist right now. So it's, again, fear of the non-existential, which is a form of insanity. I see the state of the world. It's something that I'm very concerned about. But because it's concern, it's not fear, concern brings, it motivates me into positive action. It motivates me into doing what I'm doing because I see the problem now, so that means I can fix the problem. I can address the problem. I couldn't do that before I knew what the problem was. And you've got to be open to other people's research, but you've got to look at who is saying this is the truth. This is my truth, and you need to take my reality on and make it your reality, otherwise you're the enemy. This is not the way to get through this problem. You know, we have a great opportunity here if we can put down our division amongst each other, stop measuring ourselves by our own ego, stop being so focused on who we've made ourselves to be, And look at who we are, look at who everybody else is. See, again, it comes down to respect, inner respect of yourself. Respect your own truth, because when you really, really respect yourself, truly respect yourself, respect for others comes by default. I finish every radio show with In Lakesh. I am another yourself. We are each other, and your perspective is just as valid as mine. I do not have jurisdiction. I do not have ownership. I do not have control over your reality. That is unique to you. That is what makes you who you are. This is what makes me who I am, and without that, we don't have reality. So we need to honor that in each people. We need to honor that in ourselves and honor that in others. And the division in the truth movement is highly detrimental to actually finding the truth, because truth isn't about division.
Yes, and of course, it compromises our ability to develop actual solutions because we're using so much energy in conflict. And it's like you said, I've had people who've done that too. Okay, you don't agree with this? Okay, well, you must be part of the New World Order. I mean, what is that? What is that? You know what I mean? Like, why do we get to that point? It almost like it takes away the energy that could be used to actually develop solutions and actually build, a strong community of individuals who are actually seeking to find a greater truth, but then also to implement some kind of a solution.
Well, it's fear-based mind control again. You know, people are taught to measure themselves in a certain way. And if you know, you interfere with my way of thinking. I'm scared that I may be wrong. I'm scared that I may lose the respect that I believe I have in this internet community or whatever, or all my fans or all my listeners or whatever. You know, I'm happy to prove me wrong. Hey, if you got a better option or a better idea or you know something that I don't, hey, prove me wrong. I want you to. You know, I want to know. I want to know the truth. I want to get to the bottom of this. I want to find the silver bullet that's going to save reality and save the human race. But what I've found is that the silver bullet exists within the heart of each person.
Mm.
It exists in that inner respect. It exists in you knowing who and what you are and respecting other people to be that as well, to be themselves. You know, that's the silver bullet. The silver bullet is in each one of us, but we're looking for it externally. We want someone to point the finger at. We'll create a hate campaign about the Rothschilds, and we'll all stand there and point the finger at them and go, there they are, take them out and hang them. The system's still here. We're still disconnected as anything. We're still disconnected from each other. We can't even unite as an alternate research community and respect each other here. How can we ever hope to get through this if we're not prepared to respect those other researchers out there who are on the same path that we are on? You know, we've got to honor their perspective. They might be wrong. I might be wrong. We all might be wrong. Someone, if we put it all together, though, we might find what's right, you know?
Very well said. And one other point, too, dealing with this particular issue, you called it the alternative media movement. And I've talked about this a lot, and I got a lot of resistance from this, but a lot of the information, I shouldn't say information, how the information is presented, the information that is maybe well-researched and then distributed, how it's presented oftentimes is it comes from a very fearful vantage point. And I want to ask you, how important is it for us to approach this without these extreme levels of fear? And how is it that fear can be used ultimately to disempower our ability to actually realize a solution?
Well, look, it's incredibly important that we view it from the right perspective. You know, I've seen movies that have been like that, have had fantastic information, and laid it all out. Yep, this is the problem. Here's the danger that we're in. And then it just stops. And you go, wow, now I'm terrified. You know, what do we do now? You know?
Yeah.
And again, it's opportunity. You've got to look at these problems as opportunities. That's why you're being presented with the problem. We're a learning species. We learn by our mistakes. We keep doing things, we get them wrong, and we keep trying until we get them right. That's how we learn. That's who we are. That's what our species is. We made a big mistake with our system. We've got big mistakes in our society. All these mistakes come from our own disempowerment. So it's really, really important that when you present information to people, if you're presenting them with a problem, you at least offer a path to constructive dialogue which might lead to a solution. Even if you don't have the solution, at least try to construct some path which is going to empower the listener or empower the watcher, which is going to motivate them to act, not make them go and lock themselves in a cupboard with a gun and wait for the Homeland Security to come. You know, I mean, that's not a solution, folks. You know, we've got a situation here.
Yeah.
And it's all based on the disempowerment of the individual. So you've got to be seeing these problems as opportunities, because that's what every problem is. Just remember, we are a learning species. We only learn through our problems. We only learn by making mistakes. And there's a mistake in human consciousness, and we have the opportunity now to correct that mistake. We have the opportunity to create a very, very powerful future here, because never before in human history has the whole workings of the mechanism been laid so bare. And the mechanism, it's just fiction. It's just lines on pieces of paper put in place by public trustees. And it exists and it's perpetuated because we've forgotten what our relationship with these people is. We keep operating within the legal system they constructed rather than stepping above it and demanding transparency in our control systems. Transparency to an extent where we can remove the toxins, can remove the control mechanisms, and put humanity back onto the right path where we can live in a state of self-governance and self-determination and individual respect.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of fiction and public trustees, that was a question that had come in earlier. Can Max Egan share how he discovered natural law and its effect on his life?
Look, to me, natural law is just the way things are. Natural law is based in respect. I mean, I respect everybody and I respect everything. And as I was saying earlier, I don't have jurisdiction over the system. I don't have jurisdiction over anybody. People say to me, Max, you know all this stuff and you manage to stay out of the firing line of the authorities. Why can't you lead us? Get out there and speak for us, you know, but I can't speak for you. And like I said before, I can't take the system on because the system's fiction. It doesn't exist. I'm not going to attack something that doesn't exist. But what I've always thought of myself is that I'm a unique expression of creation inhabiting this vessel that was given to me for the experience. And that's what everybody is in the world. That's what everything is. Everybody, everything is a unique expression of creation. And I don't have jurisdiction over the people within the system. I'm not, you know, if they want to operate within that system, that's fine. They can do that. It doesn't affect me. Not until they try to inflict that upon me. And I've always known who I am. I've always questioned authority from that respect. Like I was saying, they say, where do you live? I say, in this vessel. You know, is this a trick question? You know, I'm living. You know, so it's knowing that. I mean, that simple knowing of who and what you are will get you through almost any situation legally, any legal or government situation. If you can treat the people that you're dealing with as people, just like you, and ask them to show you the authority that they have. There's a thing that I mentioned on the show last week or yesterday's show called sui generis. This is for people who know that they're unique, they know that they have no peers, they are a completely unique expression of creation, and they need a legal terminology to explain that. Well, the terminology is sui generis, which means that you are unique. You are a divine expression of creation. You could say to the court, you know, I have no business here. I don't believe, you know, I've broken any of your laws. And they may say, well, you've all got to be judged by the laws of your peers. We're all judged by the laws of our peers. You say, well, can I be identified by my fingerprints and my DNA? Well, then, according to your testimony, I'm unique, and therefore I have no peers. Therefore, I stand before the court in the capacity of sui generis. Mm. And if you believe you have jurisdiction or a right of authority or a right of ownership over me, because I believe I'm only answerable to my creator, my unique expression of consciousness is only answerable to that which created me, which is God, whatever I perceive God to be. And so if you are claiming you have a right of ownership over me, I require you to produce a contract bearing the wet ink signature of my creator, which granted you jurisdiction over this vessel. And if you cannot do so, then I require proof of claim that you are not operating a slavery system. Because you have no right of ownership over this vessel. I live my life following the one law of creation, which I believe is service to creation for the creator. Service to creation is not service to myself at the expense of others, but it's not service to others at the expense of myself. Mm. I'm as unique and beautiful as every other person out there that I respect. And if I don't respect myself, I can't respect them. And you have no right of ownership. You have no jurisdiction over this vessel. If you're claiming you are, show me proof of claim, because I am sui generis. Everything is sui generis. And that is the reason I don't even attack you for believing you have a right of ownership over me, because I don't have a right of ownership over you. You're free to believe that if you want to, but I can tell you that it's not true. You know, you've got to show me that you have this right of ownership. There's no harm in any action that I've done because I stepped over one of your lines or broke one of your rules in your book. That's not law. The only law is do no harm. And the only harm that's being done here is me if I'm prosecuted for breaking one of your rules. So who broke the law?
Mm.
You know, these are the sorts of logical statements you can bring when you're talking to these people. Like I said before, you can't do it to police officers because they're not real bright. They won't even understand the term sui generis. But you can do this in a legal situation in a courtroom, and you can just ask these people who they are. But remember, you're dealing with people, flesh and blood people. It's not about the court. It's not about the system. It's not about the rules. It's about two men or a man and a woman conversing with each other. And seeing why one would presume to have a right of ownership over the other.
Mm, wow. Can you spell sui generis if you don't mind?
S-U-I is the first word, and then G-E-N-I-R-I-S.
Oh, okay. Surgeon. Okay, I got you.
Sui generis.
Okay, I got you. Excellent. Yeah.
Look that up. Google that. Sure. Anybody out there listening, Google that term, and because it gives you a legal reference for your uniqueness and your perfection and your beauty and your unique expression of creation that you are. It shows you that no one has a right of ownership over you. You have no peers. So if you have no peers, how can you be subject to the laws of your peers? How can you be subject to the general legal system if you are not part of the general public? You are a unique expression of creation. Know that. Know who you are. Know the art of yourself. Know that no one has your uniqueness. No one has your expression. No one else will ever, ever be like you. You are here right now to do something with this time. So pay attention to what you've got.
Very well said. One other question, how can inner work help us to break the programming we receive throughout our lives?
Look, I think I just explained that. I mean, this is the basis of my whole message. Know who you are. This is what you're looking for. All the research that people are going down, all the rabbit holes that they're going down, all the people that they want to point the finger at, what they're looking for is themselves. You know, their self and their own art. Understand what you are, you know. Like I often say, you know, your consciousness isn't local to your body. It exists in the field out here. It's just energy. The whole universe is electric. It's all energetic. There's a vessel there over in America that looks like Lennon on it, and it downloads one frequency of a consciousness that exists in the field, in the vacuum of everything. And that one frequency you experience is Lennon on it. I pull another frequency from that same field. It comes into this vessel, and I experience it as Max Egan. We are completely unique and absolutely divided from each other, but we are absolutely connected to the same source. This is where you come from. You come from source. You come from the mind of God itself, from conscious creation itself. All creation is conscious. The whole lot, the energy itself is conscious. I did a film called The Awakening, where I tried to explain this to people. When you understand this about yourself, and you see your uniqueness and your beauty, and live your life to experience the art of yourself, it falls into place. You can't help but wake up. You can't help but help people around you. You can't help but have a good and fulfilled life. I don't have any stake on the outcome of anything. I don't judge people for what they do. I don't have any stake on the outcome of anything anybody does unless they personally attempt to inflict themselves upon me. You know, it's just a way of living. It's a way of respecting yourself. It's a way of understanding how reality works. I really believe that when you understand how reality works and what you really are, I mean, I live my life in a state of constant fascination and amazement. I'm amazed that I can sit here in a chair and I can talk to you. I'm amazed that I can look out the window and see trees and birds and grass and just the stuff that's around me. I'm amazed that I can experience reality. It's incredible that we're here doing this. This conscious experience that we're having, it has so much potential. And really, when you find out what you are, and it's really just an understanding and a knowing. People say to me, how do I get there? How do I try? How do I get there? I say, well, you're not getting there because you're trying. Mm. Why are you trying to believe that you are infinite consciousness? If you don't believe it, why are you trying to believe it? I don't have to believe it because I already know it. So therefore, I don't have to try. If I was trying, it would be only because I don't know it. If I don't know it, why do I want to believe it? You know, you see what I mean? It's a paradox.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've often said, you know, like there was a quote by somebody as well, I think, that said, you know, it's like a man looking for enlightenment is like a man riding a donkey in search of a donkey.
Yes, I've heard it. He's riding a donkey. He's riding, yes, right, absolutely.
You know, it's there. You don't try, you know.
Mm.
You know?
Well, to close out the show, Max, you know, as we've talked, you've actually outlined at least four solutions to what we would call control network. And I know that in the past you've said things like this control network is here because it comes out of our imagination. So as a species, we have to own up to that. But then also we have to look at solutions. And some of the things that you've outlined already was to know thyself, to a common level of respect for all things. Self-governance was another thing. And then, of course, metaphysically here, you were speaking of the connection between all things that can also be applied to us here physically as well on planet Earth. What would you say is the most important, let's say, possible solution to this control network?
Knowing yourself. Mm. Know who you are. Know who and what you are. And be aware of how you interact with reality around you. Simply change your perspective of what you are. You're not a little disempowered thing that can't do anything against the big machine. You're infinite consciousness. You are able to do incredible things. You know, the human mind is able to create matter by observing it. Look at things like the measurement problem. Look into quantum physics, stuff I've talked about so much on the show. But, you know, just know who you are. That is the most important thing. Everything that you're searching for is within yourself. It's often been said, if you change the inner world, you'll change the outer world. And people think, well, that's just mumbo-jumbo, New Age stuff. How is changing my perspective going to turn my red wall into a blue wall?
Mm.
You know, you're missing the point. It's not like that. It was all created by our imagination, the whole lot. We have to imagine anything before we make it. The house that you're in is a product of imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Someone had to imagine it and put it there and build it. Everything that we've built, someone imagined it before we built it. We imagined all of this. This whole control grid, it's a product of imagination. So let's imagine something different, and then let's apply ourselves to creating that.
Absolutely. Imagine something different. It's interesting. You brought up the you know, blue paint on the wall, or see the blue paint as red, or see the rain paint as blue. Well, you know, you change your perspective. Maybe you might think to go and get, you know, a bucket of paint and a paintbrush and paint the wall a different color.
Exactly. It takes audience participation, folks. That's the problem. People are just observing this whole thing, but they're not participating. And what we require to change reality is audience participation. And this comes with you knowing that you have the power to participate. Yeah. And like I said before, this is what I do. I'm nobody. I'm nothing. I'm just a voice that speaks out. You can all do this. You can all make a difference. You can all lead by example in your community. You can lead by example in what you do, and you can speak your truth and respect others for speaking their own. This is the change you can make, and everybody can do it.
Absolutely. Very well said. Max, what would be the best way for people to contact you?
Best way is to go to my website, thecrowhouse.com. Look, I've got two Facebook pages, but they're both full. And I've got two support pages. They've got a lot of people on there as well. The best way to contact me is through the Crow House. It's very difficult for me to answer a lot of emails, though. I've got so much on. I do mean to. I'm going to even try to get someone to go through my emails one day and help me answer them all. I've just got so many. But if you need me, or if you want to do an interview or anything like that, you can contact me through the Crow House. Everything I've done is on thecrowhouse.com. All the radio archives, there's 6 years of radio archives there. There's like 300 or 400 shows there, like 300 or 400 hours of me talking about this stuff. So I've said a lot about it. So it's all there. You can actually see the progression. If you start, you can actually see the progression of how I was quite nervous when I started doing radio. And you can hear even my spiritual growth through the thing. There's certain perspectives that have changed.
Mm-hmm.
The book that I wrote, there's certain conclusions that I came to in that book that I published in 2005, which I have different conclusions now. It's all part of the growth. And you've got to be prepared to do that. All the people out there doing this research, never, ever limit yourself to a belief system or one paradigm. Always allow yourself to grow. And then you can respect other people. And all this division in the truth movement will break down. You know, it's a big part of it. So you can see all of that through there. You can see the growth. It's all there. It's all on thecrowhouse.com. That's really the best way to find me.
Mm-hmm. And then you also have a YouTube account.
I have a YouTube account, which is The Crow House as well. There's an old account there called AOD Scarecrow, which has got like 38,000 subscribers. But I don't actually use that account anymore. It's just there as an archive. And I've got a new account now called The Crow House. And if you go to thecrowhouse.com, you'll see a link there that says YouTube channel. You can just click that. It'll take you straight to the YouTube channel. You can subscribe, and you'll get all my weekly radio shows uploaded there.
All right. Excellent. And when do you upload those weekly radio shows? Is there a particular day?
Yesterday.
Okay, so yesterday.
So it's Friday nights in the United States when I go to air, and it's uploaded within a couple of hours of doing the show. So most people wake up and they listen to it on Saturday mornings in the United States.
All right, so there you go. Those of y'all who are in the States, every Saturday morning, you have a wealth of information right there waiting for you. Max, it has been an absolute pleasure to listen to you and to talk with you. As I said it before, I was smiling through the whole interview. I really do appreciate you taking the time to share your knowledge with us.
Absolute pleasure, Leonard. It's been great coming on. I've wanted to come and have a chat to you for a long time. I'll have to drag you over to my show and have you on there one day soon as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime, Max. Well, on behalf of the Honor family and on behalf of our listening audience, I want to send you lots of love and positivity. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, brother.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Peace. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Max Eakin, what a phenomenal radio interview guest. And again, I want to encourage y'all to make sure you head on over to his website, www.thecrowhouse.com. Thecrowhouse.com. He's also on YouTube under The Crow House. And he's on Facebook under Max Eakin. I want to thank everyone for tuning on in. Those of y'all listening in live in the chat room, thank you for being here. Also, those of y'all who will be listening to this in the archive, I want to thank you as well. My name is Lennon Honor, and I manifest positivity to all of you who hear these words into the infinite creation streams, into all of existence, positivity, love, and happiness. Thank you so much for listening to this broadcast here on LennonHonor.com with our very special guest, Max Eakin. Again, my name is Lennon Honor. Until next time, y'all please take care. Peace.